Audioversity, the voice of Reichman University.
Special interviews, highlights, and live broadcasts from ICT's annual international conference.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Audioversity, the voice of Reichman University. My name is Noah Olestad, and we are here at the ICT 21st Annual International Conference, the World Summit on Counterterrorism. We're getting the opportunity to speak with and learn from some of the participants here today. I'm currently joined with Dr. Michael Barak. Dr. Michael Barak is a senior researcher here at the International Institute for Counterterrorism, where he serves as the head of the Global Jihad and Palestinian Terrorism Desks. He is a lecturer at the Lauder School of Government, Diplomacy and Strategy at Reichman University, where he teaches about global jihad, Palestinian terrorist organizations in standard and colloquial Arabic. Dr. Barak has published articles in both Hebrew and in English on his research topics as follows: global jihad, including Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Hamas, modern Egypt, political Islam, Salafi movements in the Arab world, Sufi movements in the Arab world, and social media networks in the Arab world. How are you today, Dr. Barak?
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Of course, thanks for being here. So jumping right into it, it's been about 1 year since the U.S. has left Afghanistan and the Taliban has regained control over the region. What have been the most significant changes in the region thus far, and what are the implications do they have on Middle Eastern geopolitics?
Okay, so first of all, let's remember that we are 1 year after the Taliban regime. Mm-hmm. There is a big question, what if Taliban was really changed, if it's Taliban 2, Taliban 3, if it's really once, if its declaration that he was not going to support any more terrorism, it's true. But unfortunately, we see that the end of July, mm-hmm. American drone assassinated Sheikh Ayman Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda, in a house in Kabul that was under the supervision of Siraj ad-Din al-Haqqani, who is the interior minister in the Taliban regime. In other words, we see that Taliban denies that he supporting or shelter foreign fighters and also Al-Qaeda members. And in the same time, we see that this is an evidence, the assassination in Ayman Zawahiri, that there is Al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan. Also, UN reports in 2021 and also in this May, this year, show there is intelligence information that there is a bond between Al-Qaeda and Taliban, and Al-Qaeda members are still found in Afghan soil. Now, Taliban, let's say Afghanistan today is in a very sophisticated, very complex and difficult situation where there is a humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. There is starvation. There are, horror and difficult. The civilian society is found in a very difficult situation. Women are selling their children in order to survive. There is other things that I can mention, but so the situation is not good, and Taliban is interested. Now he's the boss on Afghanistan. Now he has to run a state, so he needs the support of the international community. What does it mean? He wants that the international community will invest money in Afghanistan in order to promote the economic situation and to solve or to diminish the humanitarian situation. It's a ticking bomb. So Taliban, we see it differently, is also addressing to one of his big adversaries, India. Also, Siraj ad-Din al-Haqqani spoke twice to the Indian TV that he wants that India will invest in Afghanistan. So now we see that Taliban wants to normalize ties. He said it very clearly, except from Israel, of course. And I will explain it later. And in order to draw investments in Afghanistan and to improve the situation of the civilian society and also to win a legitimacy to his regime. But let's remember there is also Doha agreement, which Taliban promised not to shelter foreign fighters, but there are still foreign fighters in Afghanistan, about several thousands. From different ethnic groups, for example, Uyghurs, which are the originals from China, Punjab, India, Pakistan, and Chechens and others. The question is, what are those foreign fighters who fought next to Taliban are going to do? So right now we see a diplomacy effort by Taliban to win legitimacy to his regime and to stabilize the national state of Afghanistan.
Okay. So of course we can never say for sure. However, in hindsight, was there anything that could have been done to prevent the Taliban's rise to power in Afghanistan, in your professional opinion?
We don't have to look by Western eyes. Some population, I think many parts, we don't know how many, but let's say there is a support in the Taliban. Let's remember that 20 years America ruled on Afghanistan, so there is a Western educated society that wants democracy, that wants human rights for women, of course. This, now the situation of the women is very bad. So there is sectors who want democracy and etc. In the other end, several sectors in the society wants the Taliban. They were parts of this Afghan society were disappointed from the pro-American regime because of corruption, because of, they could not find jobs, etc. So I don't think that if the question if you could prevent from Taliban to go to power, I don't think you could prevent that. But America tried to solve it by the Doha Agreement. The Doha Agreement, one of the terms, say that Taliban had to open negotiations with the pro-American regime in Kabul, that there will be a consensus among the civilian society in Afghanistan, that there will be a regime that will represent everyone. But Taliban did not respect it. I don't know if you could prevent this from Taliban to get to power, because Taliban also used the social media networks in order to terrify pro-American Afghan soldiers not to cooperate or to oppose to the Taliban conquest of Afghanistan.
Okay. What is the Taliban's role in global jihad?
Okay, so Taliban is not, it's not black or white. Okay. There are different factions inside Taliban. There is the leadership of Kandahar. There is, some factions in Taliban, they are not interested to support global jihad. They want to focus on the national state of Afghanistan to promote it. But on the other hand, there are also factions, for example, El Haqqani network or family, which having strong ties with Taliban, with Al Qaeda, also with ISIS in Khorasan, and they are also connected to the Pakistani intelligence factors. So, right now we see that Haqqani family are having important roles inside the Taliban regime. Like I mentioned, Siraj Din al-Haqqani, who is the interior minister of Taliban regime, and he gave his house to Ayman al-Zawahiri. And he was a big fan. Until now, there is a poster by the United States that he is wanted because he was charged on sending suicide attackers against American troops in Afghanistan. He has blood on his hands of American soldiers and also Afghan civilians. So this guy, I think, is the key figure in Taliban who still have links, although he denies it from every platform, that this guy is definitely very suspicious, and the intelligence factors should monitor his activity to see what happens. I also mentioned the ISIS in Khorasan, who today is the big challenge on Taliban regime legitimacy. He's trying also ISIS in Khorasan. Khorasan is the Islamic name of Afghanistan. So ISIS in Khorasan is trying to recruit these foreign fighters who don't have now job, apparently, by promoting a delegitimization campaign against the Taliban, presenting Taliban as a fake jihad organization who have not won a victory in Afghanistan by jihad, but by sitting in hotels in Doha, in Qatar, drinking wine and signing this treaty with the United States. So ISIS is trying to challenge the legitimacy of Taliban and to recruit foreign fighters over there, especially the Uyghurs. I can mention that the Uyghurs, because Taliban wants to normalize ties with the international community, Taliban was also addressing to China. China is very worried and concerned about the presence of the Uyghurs in Afghanistan. They are afraid that the Uyghurs who come from the east, from the west of China, Xinjiang province, they're afraid that those Uyghurs will carry out terrorist attacks against China from the border between China and Afghanistan. There is a very narrow corridor which is called Wakhan corridor, and the Uyghurs were over there, and China was afraid that they will launch attacks against it. So Taliban promised that if China will invest money inside Afghanistan, they will expel the Uyghurs. They promised. What happened? They just relocated. They removed the Uyghurs from east of Afghanistan, from the border in China, and they moved them to the center of Afghanistan. ISIS, of course, said to the Uyghurs, "See, that Taliban is a fake jihadist organization. He doesn't care about you, the Uyghurs. He has agreement with China. Don't rely on him. He's a fake jihadist. So join to us." So this is like a campaign from ISIS to recruit these foreign fighters.
Okay. So you mentioned that part of some factions within the Taliban have ties to Al-Qaeda. You've also mentioned that ISIS seems to be very much fighting against the Taliban. So how fair is it to assume that all jihadi organizations are the same and possess the same goals? If it's not fair, how are they different, and how do they potentially collaborate together or work against each other?
Okay, if we are talking about global jihad, we are referring to two main organizations, Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Mm-hmm. Both of them have the same ideology, the same vision to establish a global caliphate, but the strategy is different. Al-Qaeda is more patient. He doesn't want now to declare on a caliphate. He doesn't think that this is the time. He wants, first of all, to prepare the hearts and the minds of the people that there will be a demand from the bottom, from the civilian society, to establish a caliphate. And they are also very cautious with using the takfir tool. Takfir is meaning to label someone as an infidel. So Al-Qaeda say, before you are going to label someone as an infidel, be cautious, otherwise we will also lose the support of the people, and we don't want now to create antagonism among the people. So Al-Qaeda is very cautious with that. In contrast to ISIS, ISIS is declared on a caliphate in June 2014 by Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. They want it now, they don't want to wait. And the second difference is that ISIS doesn't care to use, is not cautious, but in using without thinking with the takfir. If you are not with us, then you are an infidel. So those are main two differences. And also ISIS wants to control territory, and Al-Qaeda can has in mind that he can postpone this idea. So the target is the same, but the strategy is different. If we are speaking about other jihadist organizations who are not global jihad, for example, Hamas, I'm speaking about the Sunni. The Shia is something else. If we are speaking about the Sunni jihadist organization, let's say national jihadist Hamas, this is a different story. Hamas, who belongs still to the Muslim Brotherhood, he wants also a caliphate, but he doesn't speak about it. He said in the first manifesto of Hamas in the late 80s of the last century, he wanted to establish an Islamic Emirate on the territory of Palestine, of course, to destroy Israel. But this is, I think, for another session about the Muslim Brotherhood and the Hamas. But there are similarity between Hamas to other jihadist organizations. They want the same thing. Yes.
So then, how did it happen that Al-Qaeda seems to work together with the Taliban, or at least certain factions within the Taliban, and ISIS seems to work against them and try to challenge their reign? Why did that occur?
So if you're going back to, let's say, the 80s, there was the Afghan war, mm-hmm. okay, in the 80s. And Bin Laden and Abdallah Azzam, the mentor of Bin Laden, the father of the global jihad, they fought next to students who learned in madrasa, in Islamic schools in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. They fought with each other. Those students became late Taliban. And in the 90s, there became, and I'm putting in the very short summary, mm-hmm. There was an ally between Taliban, who was established in 94, to Al-Qaeda. There was a strong bond. And Haqqani, the Haqqani family, also played a very important role in strengthening the ties between Al-Qaeda to the Taliban.
Okay.
And since then, the ties only become stronger. Mullah Omar, the founder of Taliban, was a good friend of Osama bin Laden. Also, in the letters of Osama bin Laden's, which were found in Abu Tabad in Pakistan, Osama bin Laden said that he could rely only on Mullah Omar and not on other factions in Taliban. So after 9/11, before that, Afghanistan of Mullah Omar, under the Taliban leadership, they gave shelter to Al-Qaeda, and Afghanistan became a hotbed for also jihadists and also specifically Al-Qaeda. And after 9/11, things changed. The Taliban was not satisfied. He was surprised that Al-Qaeda made these 9/11 attacks, and of course Al-Qaeda members had to flee from Afghanistan. They found shelter in Iran, Pakistan, other places. And this is for another session if you want. After the Iraqi invasion, American invasion to Iraq, some Al-Qaeda members returned to Afghanistan, and still the bonds, and Al-Qaeda helped also to the Taliban to fight against the Taliban in Afghanistan, etc. So the ties only became stronger.
Mm-hmm. And so then with the regaining of control of Afghanistan from the Taliban, what does this mean for Israel? What are the implications that Israel will have to deal with?
Okay, I think we have two main points from lessons from Afghanistan, or maybe even more. First of all, there are links between Hamas to the Taliban. We saw that after the last escalation in May in 2021, a big escalation, Hamas published a photo with Ismail Haniyeh, the leader of Hamas, with one of the prominent leaders of Taliban in Doha. And since then, we see Hamas published several pictures from these meetings. They blessed each other on the efforts of Taliban to stabilize the state of Afghanistan and their success to expel the Americans. And Taliban blessed Hamas on his success to defeat, allegedly, Israel. So I think the security factors should monitor these links. And this is a source for concern about the increasing ties between Hamas to the Taliban, mm-hmm. because Hamas can use now the networks, logistical, financial, and recruiting networks in Afghanistan in order to empower and to recruit more people to empower the Hamas movements. Hamas can have training camps also in Afghanistan. So this is something that we have to follow. Secondly, there is the moral aspect. Like we see that the victory of the way that the Taliban is presenting is overtaking of Kabul, this is a source for inspiration for Hamas and also other jihadist organization. And Hamas also calls to his people, look on the Taliban model, not only Hamas but also other jihadist movements also in Mali and in Idlib, north of Syria. They say that the model of Taliban was very successful. They were dedicated to the cause. And even if the resistance against the occupier, in this case, allegedly Israel, even if it will take 20 years, 50 years, if they will stick to the target, then they will achieve their goal. And Taliban is the example for that. So I think these are the main two points that have an impact.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for joining me here today. And for our listeners who are interested in learning more on the topic, where can they find more of your work and more of your research?
In ICT website, of course. We have a new site. You are welcome to see it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Barak.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Special interviews, highlights, and live broadcasts from ICT's annual international conference.
All our shows and podcasts available online on our website and on all podcast platforms. Search Audioversity.